So first of all, we think that blockchain, cryptocurrency, is a new form of security. It might be able to replace, you know, the previous structure of exchange and securities. We think that blockchain is all about tokenization. Now, a lot of people might dispute that, and that's perfectly fine. But, you know, from our perspective, we think that anyone can tokenize utility in project or initiative on a blockchain, and actually anyone from all over the world can contribute to the building effort of an ecosystem and share in the reward. We also think that blockchain is all about wealth reallocation. So the market reallocates wealth based on innovation. Now to get started, let's first take a look at the two greatest initiatives of blockchain, from Bitcoin to Ethereum. First of all, our perspective is that Bitcoin really shows that every network node can become an exchange and a bank with very low cost as compared to traditional exchange with Bitcoin exchange. Now, conventionally or traditionally, before Bitcoin, going public is the main motive for a lot of companies. The key achievement is to be listed on a public exchange. What that means is that you need to have the exchange first before you have the security. Now, is it that the same case with Bitcoin? Well, Bitcoin was born in 2009, but the first Bitcoin exchange was born in 2010. So there was first the token, and then the exchange. Whereas in traditional capital markets, there's first the exchange, then the security. So imagine you're buying a stock on the US market. You may be able to buy the stock of the same company in maybe the Korean market or the London stock market, but they are not the same securities, and you're not able to do arbitrage between the markets. It is not really the same case with Bitcoin, because arbitrage can be easily done across border. Back in last December, the price of Bitcoin in Korean market was 20% to 40% higher than the prices in other markets. And why is that the case? Because, well, there was a strong expectation of war in the Korean Peninsula. The sentiments that the won forex rate did not reveal due to our government intervention were shown very clearly in the Bitcoin markets because of arbitrage operation between the Korean markets and markets in the rest of the world. This indicates that the real won forex price should be at least 30% lower than the official forex rate. Well, let's take a step further and let's discuss about Ethereum. In 2014, there was a proliferation of cryptocurrency other than Bitcoin. Back there were mainly two kinds of cryptocurrencies, Bitcoins-like tokens and assets-backed tokens. Aside from Ethereum, there is only OMNI, Bitcoin Share, Futurecoin, and many others who said that they were going to transform cryptocurrency by putting assets on the blockchain. So why did Ethereum make it and not the others? Let's take a look at each of them first. For the Bitcoin-like token, most Bitcoin-like token is illiquid. So even if they had the incremental improvements on Bitcoin and they have the same features of Bitcoin, without liquidity, they are pretty much useless. Another point of view is that a simple answer for the victory of Ethereum is that there is actually value for assets built on Ethereum. The first thing that Ethereum wants to advertise or promote it was that it is a dApp platform, so decentralized application platform. So projects on Ethereum, they actually do create assets instead of saying, okay, we are trying to create a token that is backed by a physical asset. For instance, the first Ethereum project was a decentralized betting platform. The utility is that the casino will not be able to flee with money, and the process will be transparent and ensured by the audit of the codes. Moreover, no government can shut down the platform, and the token incentive system is also a profit-sharing system. So compare that with token anchored or backed by assets. What do these asset-backed tokens really offer? Other than cryptocurrency people, who else has the need to buy these asset-backed tokens? Because you can just buy off the market, right? There is this new trend of security token right now in 2018 because of regulation. So things might be different now, but I think the same question still stands. So why do we need an asset-backed token, you know, as compared to tokens like Ethereum that actually creates projects that would produce new kinds of assets? Last but not least, Ethereum actually attracted a lot of projects because of you know, the ability to build assets, build codes on it, and it is able to build a very responsible and creative community. That also becomes another source of value. Following on Ethereum's footstep, and NEO, Cardano, and other smart contract platforms are doing the same thing. So let's go back to our initial stance. When we reevaluate financial technology from this perspective, we can use technology to make anything financialized or securitized. The primary use of blockchain is in finance and is used to securitize utility and, you know, things or utility assets that we are not able to quantify and securitize before. Let's take a look at, you know, old tradable products for now. For old tradable products or everything that is in an exchange, there is this characteristic that there are two components to the prices. The first component is value, so the fundamental layer. The second value is the bubble, which is the expansionary or extended layer, as according to Hayek. In times of great hype or mass euphoria, the speculative layer expands unrestrainedly from the fundamental value core. But when the market crashed, the speculative bubble would come crashing down and seeking support from the value layer. Now let's take a look at this simple image right now. Essentially, trends and developments that would be world-changing usually experience exponential growth in a very short amount of time. Later trends will be less efficient at the beginning, but eventually it will overtake older trends because of exponential growth. And right now we believe that blockchain is in the process. It is less efficient right now than conventional database structures, but blockchain has a lot of potential, and we believe that as advances in hardware and different protocols that consist the blockchain gets better, blockchain will eventually be a very, very useful technology. And moreover, it is also a thinking paradigm. So does security actually have value? Market is essentially a value discovery mechanism. Let's take a look at the stock prices or the Dow Jones Industrial Average from 1789 to 2013. And we would immediately see three things. First of all, the market was generally uptrend. And secondly, there were massive fluctuations at the beginning of the market. Going in the future, you can see that the fluctuation become much, much less. Last but not least, at the beginning, we see that even if the market crashed 90%, it still came back. So there's gotta be some inherent value support for the market, for it to survive, for it to, you know, prosper in the future. And we believe that that value is market's unique capability to discover value. So why should we have faith in blockchain in the long term, right? Right now the market is crashing and all the cryptocurrency forums and Facebook groups, they just become silent. Fundamentally, we believe that it is really about the protection of private property. And right now, we have different governments and different nations. I mean, nations and governments, they set the upper limit right now of how much protection private property receives. What blockchain actually does is that it makes private property much more protected in the sense that it is not completely under the control of any individual nation or any individual country. Once you have the ledger, you can actually trade it. Once you register the asset on the ledger, I mean, this is the most primitive form of registration on blockchain, then it will stay there and everyone knows that you own this property. And so you can sell it, you can do all sorts of exchange on it. That serves as a fundamental layer of the extended order as proposed by Hayek. The protection of private property is the foundation of the extended order. And what the extended order really means is that, you know, capital builds upon itself. Capital expands outwards from the most basic currency, very stable, the value of these kind of assets are very stable. Going outwards, you have maybe bonds, debts, and going outwards again, you have stocks, and then going outwards, you have securitized derivatives. So each layer takes on more risk, but then it is also much more expensive. And that really connects back to our previous slide where there are two layers in that circle. The core is the value layer and the outer rim is the speculative layer. When there's hype or when everyone is very confident, everything expands outward unrestrainedly and it becomes really, really huge. But then when market crashes, it's under its own weight, the whole thing comes crashing down, but eventually they will find some support, either in a very, very fundamental value layer or in some inner capital layer. If they turn out to support this capital order, then they will become the new fundamental layer. So the fundamental layer eventually expands. And we think that at the core of this is the protection of private property. It is blockchain's better ability to protect private property. When we talk about blockchain, we have to talk about what might be the future of the cryptocurrency market. Now, we are hardcore blockchain supporters. We also think that, there's a very good argument for public chain and cryptocurrency. There are three things that we think worth discussing or worth thinking really hard about. But first of all, we really think that for cryptocurrency to become, something that is worth our while, there should be over 1 million types of cryptocurrencies in the future, because that means that cryptocurrency is very widely adopted. That means that cryptocurrency has become an engine for innovation around the globe. Second thing is, we think that cryptocurrency can serve as a low-cost value discovery system. Right now, we are seeing that ICO is raising funds in, $20 million, $30 million. We think that in the future, once you have a good idea, you might be able to raise just $200,000, $100,000 to get your project started. Or you might raise maybe several millions if it's a bigger project. Essentially, the cost is much lower and it's becoming more global. So there's less friction in the capital transmission to encourage innovation. Last but not least, and I think I've touched that point in the last 10 seconds, cryptocurrency will become the cradle of global crowdsourced innovation. And there are several things that are for it. Cryptocurrency is inherently global. You cannot easily restrict it to a locale or country or any kind of geographical regions. Anyone who has a computer can download the wallet, can download the full node, and they are in the network already. So once you, if you want to issue your cryptocurrency, because you have a great idea that this cryptocurrency will offer some utility, then you have really a global audience. And we think that if cryptocurrency or its future iterations become dominant, it will be very, very easy for people to find fundings for their innovation. It's like Kickstarter. It's like Kickstarter, but just with less regulation as compared to the equity crowdfunding. So last but not least, this is our website, xtoken.org. And I really hope that we can discover value together and think about how the market will evolve in the future. Thank you very much. Does anyone have any questions?
Why is it a non-profit?
It's a foundation. So.
Is there a security reason or regulatory reason why?
No, our main foundation is in Singapore. So, we think that a foundation is better at it's safer in the sense that if you're for profit, then a lot of questions would come up about, well, why are you doing this? Are you doing this for any kind of a money laundry question or anything like that? I think foundation is generally less maligned, first of all, and secondly, it's much more flexible at the start, yeah.
And would you be able to share, as part of the founding team or founders, how does the allocation of token apply to this foundation?
We actually haven't done an ICO yet. We are thinking that ICO might not be the best way to do it. There is this new concept of IDO and just different kind of things flowing out right now because of the market is so bad. People started having different kinds of ideas. ICO is no longer the dominant, funding methodology. Yeah.
I don't know if there's a question or just an observation. I was interested in you said that, that this makes all assets secure, whatever. Because you're putting it out there and everyone knows, but I mean, there's a whole lot of assets that people don't want now. So how does that affect? No system is perfect, right? Emir might buy the Mayflower Hotel, and his wife is very happy, but he might also have apartments in New York and San Francisco, and he doesn't want his wife to know that. there's assets that people don't want.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. Thank you for the question. I think it's a pretty interesting question. Well, first of all, let's compare Monero. Monero is an anonymous token that basically when you transact, no one knows who you are. As compared to Bitcoin. Bitcoin is semi-anonymous, but you still can track. In our eyes, there is little difference. The reason for that is because we are focused more on the property protection kind of thing. So what that means is that if we have this chain, like if you have a blockchain that registers our assets, we can set it in a sense that there are definitely technologies in the future that is able to basically have settings that say, okay, we will only, like you can choose who you will do to. That's not a problem. That's more like a technology problem than a design or than a, you know, some kind of a paradigm problem. What we're really getting into is we think that blockchain essentially, or cryptocurrency essentially offers a better protection of private property because it's global. You can compare US with China. In certain places in China, private property is very well protected. But in the Chinese constitution, there is a saying that eventually the property is state-owned. So a lot of people have concern about this, but I don't think there should be a concern about this because China is definitely very advanced in this policy. Protection of private property is going to be the engine for growth, either in China or in US. But why do I say like blockchain, global protection is better than local protection? Let's say if you're in Africa, you have a property there, but their government is not strong enough to guarantee the protection. So what do you do with it, right? Now with blockchain, you can actually register that and then you can have third party really coming in to guarantee that the protection of this private property is assured in a sense of ways. So, that's what we mean. When you have a better way to register your assets, you are able to do much more and everyone knows about it, it's more transparent. So there is less of a chance for you to have your private property harmed or in some other way stolen from you.
So I want to go back to the ICO point.
Yeah.
So thinking of the problem is probably so many bad ICOs.
Right.
You have a company, maybe just like a white paper without a whole lot of
Right.
Which is absolutely insane. So from your perspective, I'm all for information myself, but from your perspective, how do we as the bad actors moving forward while also encouraging innovation?
Oh, thank you. I think in the end of the day, it's about market learning. I mean, let me show you. So this is the Dow Jones Industrial Average. You can see from the beginning, there was massive speculation because the market was fairly uneducated at that time about the implications. That's why people can manipulate the market very easily. But as you go forth, you realize that, okay, first of all, the regulation has strengthened. Secondly, people become more educated in the market. A lot of bad actors on ICO in the ICO sphere is you cannot prevent that because there is a market for them. People want to get rich, and then they see other people get rich, and there is a lot of ICOs. I mean, that's why people do ICOs with only a white paper without anything else, because in some part they have a good idea. Some projects they really have a good idea and they want to push the idea out first. But some other projects, they just want to grab money because there is money to be grabbed. So the market has to, be educated from this, one pain from another, and then they will learn. The government can speed out the process by, saying, okay, we can churn out regulation, we can churn out education programs and things like this. But eventually, the market has to learn through failures.
So you say,
I think it's very important. I mean, if we look at the internet is essentially a transmission protocol. It's a series of transmission protocols, first of all. Without the ability to communicate for one database to communicate with another, the value of a database is much more reduced. Blockchain is the same kind of thing. And, I mean, if you take a look at blockchain, and the reason why I say about exchange as traditional exchange as opposed to a Bitcoin exchange is that you have Bitcoin first. All the data regarding the transaction of Bitcoin is on the blockchain. It is not with the exchange. Whereas in traditional exchange, the data is in the exchange. There is no one place to keep all the data. Does that answer your question?
Yes. It's more so like what your thoughts on how blockchain, because people would think that Bitcoin, the first generation of blockchain, and the second generation would be like Ethereum and smart contracts, and then the third iteration would be like
interoperability, right? I think interoperability is definitely a very significant component to it, but whether in the next generation it's going to be interoperability, we don't know. Because let's take a look at Ethereum. Back in the old days, Ethereum was a very far-fetched idea. And people were like, what is this, right? I don't really understand this. What is dApp, right? They're saying, okay, this is a very new idea that is independent from whatever that came before. So I think that 3.0 might be like that in nature. Something that quite independent from previous ideas, so it is not really a logical extension for the previous projects. But that doesn't mean that interoperability won't be a primary development in the future. In fact, it is a technology that is quite essential to the development of the industry as a whole. Thank you very much.